Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. The world of print publishing is changing at lightning speed, with new online publications developing almost every day. Award-winning journalist Corey Brown has created a new model with her online food and drink publication, Zester Daily. She's here to help demystify the brave new world of journalism. Chef Greg Saunier is also just finding his way in a new setting for his beloved restaurant, Gabrielle. But that new setting has very old roots, which he'll trace for us in this week's Louisiana Eats. Corey Brown, co-founder and general manager of Zester Daily, formerly was an editor and writer with the Los Angeles Times and West Coast entertainment correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Corey's breaking new ground with her online publication, Zester Daily, and winning awards while doing so. Corey, welcome to New Orleans and to Louisiana Eats.
It's great to be here, Poppy.
Tell us about your jump from the printed page to electronic media.
Zester had a very humble beginnings. I knew that I wanted to have an online presence and I wanted to be publishing online. I did not want to be a blogger. I'm not somebody who gets up in the morning and wants to share my thoughts on my evening meal. I'm a journalist. I write stories. So I thought, who else out there is in the same position? Let's pool our resources and we're a collective. We're a journalism collective. And it started out with a dozen, and we're now up to more than 50 writers around the world.
Tell us what sort of subjects you cover.
The writers write what they know best. They write what they want to write. They write with authority because these are the subjects that most interest them. Nobody gets an assignment. And you would think there'd be all this overlap with 50 writers. It is so not the truth. Everyone is writing completely interesting, innovative stories driven by their own curiosity.
Why is the soapbox feature an important part of Zester?
Ooh, we love the soapbox. The soapbox is where we bring in outside voices, authors, activists, politicians, people with opinions. And we help them to bring those opinions to our readers. And often they are controversial, always provocative. But we are not an activist publication. Our soapbox writers write from every point of view. We've had people take on Michael Pollan. We've had people write about technique in the kitchen that they, you know, you should all be cooking in parchment. It's much more efficient. It's all over the place. And no matter what day you come and look at our site, there will be an opinion that is not like the one that was there the week before and won't be like the one that's there the next week.
I'm very curious to understand because, you know, you mentioned the blogging thing, and I never understand everybody out there writing for free. So I would like if you could explain to us how an online publication creates income.
It's the big challenge, and it's what I spend all my time working on. I wish I were just writing. That would be more fun. We are a shared revenue, shared equity site. If anyone ever makes a dime on the site, everyone shares in it. We are a true collective. It's a cooperative if I'm talking to my conservative friends. You know, there's marketing partnerships that we've developed. We syndicate. We resell the content to other publications, and that money goes directly to writers, and you know, it's split between the writers and the site. So there is a, just by definition of who our writers are, we tend to be a little more ambitious in our story selection than most food sites. You won't find five meals for $5 in 5 minutes. It's not that we wouldn't publish it. It's just that our writers are following their own interests, and nobody really wants to write that. They want to write about innovative new recipes coming out of chefs in Norway, or they want to write about ancient techniques that, you know, were popular in the medieval day that, you know, are applicable. You know, they are all over the place. So we believe that the world needs and wants high quality content, excellent reporting, and great writing. And we're banking that that's a business.
What do you see for the future of the written word?
I think we're going to read the written word, but we're not going to read it on paper. I'm moving to the iPad because I can curl up with an iPad. I can't really curl up with my computer.
Magazines on iPads are pretty compelling. I sure do like paper, but
I like the photography. You know, it pops. One of the challenges of being online and in the virtual world is to keeping up with the technology. We're just now rebuilding the whole site, bringing in a whole new architecture, because everything's changing so quickly. If you don't rebuild your site every few years, you're behind.
Do you find the new digital landscape very competitive?
Oh, my goodness. You can't believe how many sites are out there, particularly when it comes to food and drink. And it's an interesting time because the barrier to entry is very low. Anyone can have a blog. Anyone can throw together a collection of blogs. But what we're seeing now is that for 5 years or so, when there's been so many new entrants coming into the market, they were very much downscale. The vast majority of the sites are trying to deliver easy recipes for moms staying at home and cooking, not trying to tax anybody too much. We've sort of gone the other tack and saying, you know what, we're really interested in the more complex stories about food history, food culture, what's new in restaurants, what's happening with chefs. And so we stuck our flag on the more ambitious side. And it's been fun because we've kind of had it to ourselves.
Well, I have to agree with you. I love Zester because I think it's the thinking eater and cooker's site.
Well, that's what we enjoy writing about. So it just sort of happens to be what we are.
What do you see as the advantages and then conversely the disadvantages of online media?
Oh, I love the immediacy. I love the fact that we can do something quickly. We live in a virtual world. My editors work from offices and homes around the country. All the contributors are far flung. We never see each other. Yet we're in constant communication. We're in constant contact. We're able to work really efficiently as an organization. And yet when we want to get together, we can Skype. We can talk on the phone. We email constantly. There's so little time lost.
Talk to me about hits on your site. So I know people can subscribe, and I know our Louisiana Eats listeners would love to know how to subscribe to Zester Daily, but talk numbers to me about how many people are reading on an average given day. And
you know, it's interesting because we believe that in a niche audience, you know, we're not doing the magic tricks to drive crazy traffic to the site that isn't rational. We're content partners with Yahoo Shine, so Yahoo Shine sends a lot of traffic to our site.
What is Yahoo Shine?
Yahoo Shine is the food site for Yahoo on the Yahoo homepage, and you can go there and you'll see our stories teased there, republished there, but there's lots of links back to our site. The day before Thanksgiving, Barbara Haber had a story on our site on using cornflakes as stuffing for your turkey. We had 35,000 hits on Barbara's story because Yahoo featured it. So that happens a lot now. So as a site, we're probably 50,000 unique visitors a month. We're very tiny. But now that we're factoring in Yahoo, we have a very different profile.
And how long has Zester been online?
We're 3 years old, but that's in terms of our how long it's taken us to build it. About 2.5 years online. It's been a very slow growth, but it's been a total joy. The fun of being able to connect people with similar backgrounds and similar professional interests around the world, and they connect with each other and they share ideas with each other, and there's a community of professional writers and food authorities that now operate in this nice online world.
Well, as a writer, I want to thank you so much for this inspiring platform that you've created for us all. So thank you, Corey.
Thank you, Bobby.
Corey Brown, co-founder and general manager of Zester Daily. Now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The answer to this week's question, what is the name of the iconic American chef and food writer whose foundation annually awards the best of the best in America's food world, is James Beard. The awards gala, which takes place every May in New York City, is widely thought of as the Oscars of the food world. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Well, now that Jazz Fest is over, the peak of festival season is behind us, and it seems that many listeners have had an extra minute to spare. We had more participants in this week's quiz than anything we've played since Mardi Gras. So congratulations to Stuart Hall of New Orleans. You've won a very coveted culinary contest.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what family recipe was inspired by Randy Fertel's Uncle Martin and made famous on the menu at the original Ruth's Chris Steakhouse? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what family recipe was inspired by Randy Fertel's Uncle Martin and made famous on the menu at the original Ruth's Chris Steakhouse? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to LouisianaEats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. The stately building at 438 Henry Clay Avenue in Uptown New Orleans has a long and fascinating history. Here to discuss the past and future of this storied address is Chef Greg Saunier.
Greg. Hey, Poppy. Nice to see you.
Greg, I'm so glad you came to talk with us. So you and your wife, Mary, have been cooking up delicious Louisiana-style cuisine for how many years together now?
Well, Mary and I met each other at K. Paul's Louisiana Kitchen back in 1983. And it was funny because she was the sausage maker and the meat person, the seasoning mixer and all that other stuff.
Before we had the big charcuterie movement.
Right. What happened was when I came on board, I basically took her job and she moved up the ladder. But she had to show me what to do first.
So, I bet she's still doing that sometimes.
Yeah. No, she's still the boss without a doubt. So.
And then, of course, along came your restaurant, Gabrielle, named for your youngest daughter, right?
Correct. It was named for our youngest daughter, who now is 23, and my grandmother, Gabrielle, who she was named after. So,
So let's go back to that beautiful restaurant you had on Esplanade Avenue. It was such a sweet, intimate little place.
It was a quaint joint. I want to say it started out to be a hamburger joint and was probably about 20 different restaurants after it was built in 1958. We ended up as one of them in 1992, and that's when we started out. And when we started, it was a 40-seat restaurant. Certainly, we didn't know whether we were going to be successful or not at it, and so I was glad to be small. But nonetheless, I want to say we outgrew it really quickly.
So then along came Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Katrina destroyed or engulfed the building with water from above and below, and we had to make a decision of what to do after that. Obviously, along with everybody, insurance companies weren't ready to pay that anybody received one drop of flood water. So we were in a tassel with that. And then we also wanted to figure out, gee, maybe this is a time for us to move on and find another place to go to.
So you moved uptown.
We did. We found a spot, and it was amazing that it was right down the street from where we lived since 2000, and it was called the Uptowner. Now, we knew that this place was a party place, a reception hall or whatever you call it, but we also didn't know what the inside looked like. I've only been in it once, I think, before we even moved into the neighborhood, and that was for a party, which I barely remember.
Yeah, I was at a wedding there once a long time ago, too.
We looked at the place, and it was just perfect for us. It had a nice big main dining room, a beautiful courtyard with a fountain, and I want to say a 1950s kitchen that needed updating.
A lot of us knew it as the Uptowner.
Right.
But you have recently done a lot of research, and that's a really fascinating property.
Unbelievable of the history of the property. And what perpetuated me to really do this research of the property was being told by city officials that the place was never used for commercial purposes in its entire existence. And I knew that without a doubt, this thing was always the Uptowner from what we all knew it as. But before that, it must have been used for something else, huh? And so after doing the research, yeah, the Uptowner goes all the way back to 1962. That's when it became the Uptowner.
That's a pretty long time right there.
Yeah.
So before the Uptowner, what did you discover before then?
Let me start out in 1890. There was some different pieces of property that were there. One of them was definitely the Uptowner, the building of the Uptowner. And it was a store by Jefferson Acklin in 1890. That corner of Laurel Street and Henry Clay Avenue also contained several other different commercial businesses later on. Then in 1921, it converted into a pharmacy, apparently. And then we can kind of move forward up until the stages of the 1940 era. And in the 1940s era, it was called the American Beauty Salon.
Okay.
Yep. Believe it or not, I had a friend that said that his mom used to visit the Uptowner for her hair. Nonetheless, we're going to move forward and go to 1949. The building switched hands, or I want to say reinvented itself again, into Esther's Sweet Shop. Selling sweets and candies and sugars and any kind of delights there was.
Uh-huh.
We did have some people come in that were related to Aunt Esther, and they remember the shop and getting just basically being able to get whatever they want as a kid. Can you imagine that one?
That was
really
fun.
Going into the candy shop and taking whatever you want. And then in 1957, it turned into the Electric House. So we kind of went to different sources, and all of a sudden we picked up and we figured it out that it was an air conditioner joint.
You have done some serious research.
I'll tell you what, it was just a hoot.
That's divine. So what's going on Henry Clay now?
All right. After doing all this research and then contacting the City of New Orleans attorney's office and asking them, what can we do with the property? One thing remained prevalent for what they had said, and we got continuous clarifications over it, was that a law that's enacted cannot be retroactively applied to an already licensed business. Well, the Uptowner was licensed for a long, long time before we bought it. As a matter of fact, it's been commercially used for an incredibly long time.
120 years?
Yes, over 120 years, continuously operated as a commercial establishment. So we figured out, why not do this? Why not go ahead and just open and rename ourselves Gabrielle Restaurant? What's better than that name?
It's
than
the
what
one,
we operate
that's
out
the
of.
One everybody knows y'all
exactly.
by.
So there's nothing against calling yourself whatever you want. We're not going to get rid of the Uptowner because we enjoy doing receptions and parties and stuff like that. So much so that a lot of people come back and said, I remember going to a reception here. But nonetheless, we said, let's do this. Let's open up every time there isn't a buyout, so to speak, or
right.
every time there isn't a party for 50 or 60 or 100 people. And so that's what we've been doing for the past couple of weeks, really just selling the place to one person if they want.
So describe the experience. You need a reservation, right?
One of the things is we do require is a reservation. We need to know you're coming, number one. But number two is we don't want you to show up on a night when the place has been bought out. And not only that, I want to say it gives us an opportunity to know who you are. We had wanted to cover all bases. Now, even though the property goes back 122 years of commercial continuous use, we said, let's cover ourselves because since we've been operating the Uptowner, we have everybody that comes in and has a party has a contract. So we figure, why break that tradition or why even break a law if there is one against that?
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming to visit us and fill us in on this wonderful story.
Hey, this was a lot of fun, Poppy, and I appreciate it. And hopefully all your listeners will come give us a visit.
Chef Greg Saunier of the Once in Future Restaurant Gabrielle. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we commemorate Memorial Day with naval culinary specialists from across the globe.
It's your choice of either roast beef or roast lamb or roast chicken, roast potatoes, vegetables, choice of accompaniments such as Yorkshire pudding or applesauce or, you know, stuff like that. And then generally just, you know, the kind of meal that makes you feel like, you know, okay, yeah, you're away from home, but at least you've still got a home here.
Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe and the Bourbon House, Lightsegan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cookin' Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.